saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind the Dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
A very busy day in professional wrestling. WWE moving its premium live events over to ESPN, beginning September 20th with Wrestlepalooza.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was their signal. Vince McMahon is never coming back if we've got Wrestlepalooza to kick off the ESPN era.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that? I feel like Wrestlepalooza is a total Vince name. I think he would have loved it.
I think he would hate. I think he would hate a term, name with wrestling in it.
WrestleMania. Hello.
I think if he was Vince McMahon of like 2010 launching that event, would he name it WrestleMania?
Entertainment Mania.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't.
He
know what
knew
he
how to speak in sound bites.
I'm sorry.
For people who have been listening to the XL edition, that's like the sixth Shapiro drop we've got.
Okay, I've done. I've hit my quota. Okay, those are all my drops for the night. Yes, Wrestlepalooza, September 20th in Indianapolis, Indiana, as Brandon Thurston and I reported last week, as we did No Mercy coming to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, on September 27th. So you pretty much have an entire month of WWE events spread out throughout.
Get used to your new life, John.
Yeah, or no life, for that matter. Yeah. But yes, 40 minutes of news discussion talking about the ramifications of the ESPN deal, as well as WWE's continued partnership with Peacock that will see Saturday night's main event now off NBC, but continuing just on Peacock, which will include John Cena's retirement match at the end of the year and an additional Saturday night's main event happening November the 1st. So,
also a bit of conversation about the future of Chris Jericho, which seems to be a bit of a hot topic after this particular week, and a little bit of discussion about Cody Rhodes and maybe recent comments he's made about his time in AEW. So listen to the XL edition for that. Always appreciate our cafe members' support, and we provide about 40 minutes of newsworthy topic discussion for all of you guys at the start of all of these shows.
Yes, and then you'll get an exclusive portion at the end of this show as well as we go through your feedback and questions. Also up, the wellness policy on Tuesday with Way, with Neil Flanagan, our roving reporter who is off to London this weekend, and of course, Jordan Goodman talking about goods.
That's right, man. We were talking a lot about the stuff we own, our maybe possessions and the value that we put towards some of our possessions, whether it be something that we might consider as part of a collection or something that we've received as a souvenir or memento from a considerable experience in our lives. So we went a really good amount of time both sharing stories from the three of us, but also, of course, taking calls from the post-wrestling audience and seeing some of your guys' collections and things that you guys hold a lot of value for in your lives. So really enjoyable show with a lot of engagement. So and activation, of course.
Yes, and find out which of the three once performed on stage with Green Day. Was it Neil? Find out by downloading the wellness policy. Mr. Ting and I are going to be back on Thursday with a Rewind Away, going back to June 2001. The world was getting ready for the invasion angle as they were snacking on their combos and spending $29.95 on a WWF pay-per-view, which took place in New Jersey, a very notable state at this time, who had recently passed an extreme wrestling bill. Now, this would not include WWF. Would they honor the spirit of that bill in this state, or would they present Shane McMahon and Kurt Angle going through glass? We will talk about that very famous street fight between Shane and Kurt Angle, the state of the WWF going into the invasion angle, DDP, the stalker who is on this show for way too much time, almost as much as Kurt Angle on this show, and Steve Austin defending the WWF title against Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit, who would already needed neck surgery going into this match.
It was a very, very memorable summer of 2001. Wow, geez. So what are we, 14 years?
24 years.
24? Fuck. Okay, just throw an extra 10 in there. I'm looking forward to the conversation tomorrow on Rewind Away.
Okay. And we are going to be live Sunday right after Forbidden Door. So tune in. The show starts at 1. What time are we going to be on, Way?
I'm thinking...
later than 6?
No, I'm thinking 6. Like,
okay, I hope so.
The show's not going to go four hours. I'm thinking 4 hour show. What are you thinking?
I think longer than 4. I think 6 is probably a start time.
Wait, but the 0 hour is before that. Proper show starts at 1 o'clock, right?
I could still see this being a 4.5 hour pay-per-view.
Okay. Don't they have a curfew? They have a curfew, don't they?
They do. They do. They have to be out there by a certain... Is it 10? If it's 10:30, I think the curfew is 10:30 their time, which would be 5:30 Eastern. So...
Okay.
So that would be probably the time they've got to get out there. So anyway, we will be live after that show. And then Brandon and Davey are going to be burning the midnight oil. They will be live after Heat Wave on Sunday night.
Wanted to give a shout out to those guys. If you're in the Toronto area, if you're local, they will be doing a live watch party for Forbidden Door at Wide Open. So it's not a very big place. So that place will be packed with AEW fans.
It is not going to be Wide Open if you show up there late.
Yeah, so go to poisonrana.ca or at least get in contact with at poisonrana on any of your social media if you're interested. And it's always a good time watching wrestling with those guys.
All right, we're going to Glasgow, Scotland at the Hydro 7705, WrestleTix reporting. And tonight we have Excalibur, Tony Schiavone, and Mr. 205 Live himself putting on the headset, Bryan Danielson.
I was very happy to see this. And I do wonder if, like, I wonder if Tony's feeling the pressure of all of this, like, you know, all of these moves being made around him, these PLEs being announced all over the schedule. I wonder if, like, Bryan Danielson on commentary is, like, one of those sort of, like, you know, in case of emergency, hit this. Because to me, it elevates my interest. I think he's a great wrestler, but I loved his commentary whenever we got to hear it during that little time off.
Maybe he'll be used for a bit on Sunday, like, for a couple of matches.
I think he's,
like, if he's over
value.
There, like, I'm sure he's going to be incorporated into the show for some form or fashion.
One of the highlights of this show to me.
Tons of energy and like a totally different style of, like, color commentary that gets, like, really technical at times, but, and also just an excitement level that to me was always part of the 205 Live was this, like, he was just a fan, like, watching these matches with Moro was
Cruiserweight Classic,
the Cruiserweight Classic. Yes. Yeah. So Ospreay starts off the show, comes out, just a tremendous promo here. The crowd is in love with Ospreay, and he spoke about the first time as an indie wrestler being flown to Glasgow, where the indie promoter did not book him a hotel and took him straight to the arena at 10 a.m. for a 7 p.m. show. And then after the show, went out and they outdrank all the Americans. And then off into the distance, he spotted Greg's sausage roll. And I guess this is a... This tore the house down with this reference, and this is a lesson to every single performer out there. Yeah, it's great that you got your Duolingo to learn a few words in the native language, but an organic story connected to the location that you have traveled to will go much further with wrestling fans.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah. I guess if I'm a wrestler and I'm traveling to any sort of, like, new market, I'm looking up what the local I guess, signature cuisine is, because I know now of Skyline Chili, okay, from the times they've been to Cincinnati. I guess like Tim Hortons gets some mention. Do we have
Rob,
like...
I got booked here by Smosh, and I got smoshed after, and then I went down college to see Sneaky D's.
That would be amazing to hear in a promo. Greg's sausage rolls. Yeah, one of the biggest baby faces of the entire night to this crowd. I have a photo pulled up here. Does this look appetizing to you? Would you want to see a Greg sausage roll late at night after a night out of drinking?
Okay, well, if you stipulate it, would I be going to seek this out? I wouldn't turn this down. This looks like an appealing photo. This wouldn't be my first choice on the menu, but I feel I would be getting a lot of hatred and criticism if I didn't try this. So I would definitely try this.
I would
if
try
it
at
4 in the morning. Sure.
I suppose I would ask what my other options were at 4 in the morning, because I don't know, man.
I'm not a big sausage roll person.
It just looks like it's just a bunch of like cold meat inside like a pate. Like, what is this? Like a strudel?
Do you think it's cold or warm? I would hope it's warm.
I mean, it doesn't look that warm. You know, you'd want like steam coming out of it. Do they sell them warm or do they sell them cold? I don't know. I'm sure it's delicious. I'm sure.
We'll have to go.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Way answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
So he then gets serious talking about the fact that, you know, I used to be able to recover from everything. I used to be rubber, but now I am scared. At one point in my career, Taka Michinoku thought I was an alien with all I could do and recover from, but I was not cleared last week for Forbidden Door, but this match is unsanctioned. None of it is AEW's fault. The crowd chants, please don't die. And he's comfortable taking these risks because of what AEW means to him. And if it means that he'll never be the same Will Ospreay again after this match, well, he's willing to leave everything in the ring. Just a fantastic promo to sell this lights out cage match. And the fact that this is, I mean, man, we've said it so many times since he's come to AEW, but it's like, yeah, the match quality has been extremely high. You could argue like he could dial it back with how hard he's gone because it's this charisma. It's this, like, his promos had gotten very good in New Japan, but they ascended to another level where, I mean, this guy, it to me is just everything that has clicked so much. It's these types of moments as much as the matches.
100%. You can argue this might be maybe a more important element to being a franchise player than just simply being good in ring, right? This is it's made Will Ospreay, I think, maybe one of the most complete performers in all of professional wrestling. And AEW is so lucky that they have several people that you can classify as that, who are so well-rounded, both on the microphone and also in ring, that they can all be faces of this company. It's such a great problem for them to have. So much so that, like, in any other like promotion, it would be an obvious choice to give Will Ospreay the championship right now, but they have the luxury of being able to wait because they have so many. They got an MJF, they got a Swerve, they got a Hangman Page, you know, among many other people that they can also say that they are complete. But man, Ospreay is at the very, very top, and I think we're all expecting his coronation to take place about a little over, well, under a year from now.
The Death Riders interrupt, and Moxley gets into his face, and Ospreay warns him he's coming for Moxley this Sunday and dares Moxley to try and take him himself. Don't rely on your boys. So Jet Speed run out, and then Tanahashi, he got a bigger reaction on this show than any of his appearances in the G1 this year. I mean, he came out and this place went insane for Tanahashi, which seriously, I don't know if Tanahashi has ever been to Scotland. So this audience, 100%, they're never seeing him again, at least not in a wrestling setting. So this was probably a really big deal on this show when it was announced last week. And that takes us into our sixth man with Moxley, Claudio, and Yuta.
I will say, I don't know if I would have booked Tanahashi to make a run in.
Like, dude, those knees were like Hiroshi, please. We've got a cage match on Sunday. I mean, Hiroshi. I was watching this. I had to watch this after the show. So I'm watching it on like 1.5x, and still it's painful as he's like Mr. Potato Head coming down with the knees. It was just tough, man.
Yeah, really. I mean, I understand you want the surprise pop. Maybe there was really ultimately no way around it. But man, it's just like, it just kind of exposes him when, in fact, I still feel like he could do a whole lot in ring. But it didn't matter to this crowd. They were seeing a legend in front of their eyes. He was by far the most over person in this match.
I mean, he was the star of this match. And Danielson also refers to Tanahashi as one of the smartest competitors ever. Bayley is attacking with kicks, and Excalibur is saying, "Reminds us of your kicks, Danielson." And Danielson just... this is the difference between a bad color, like ex-wrestler color guy, and an effective one. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not about me getting over. It's like, he just says Bailey's kicks are way more impressive than mine. I mean, he just totally puts over Bailey here above him.
I thought Ryan was so good at like making me interested in the less popular wrestlers that are on this roster, because he would give us like a really interesting fact about them that only he would know. Somebody like, look at the way Alex Windsor does a headlock.
The rotational strength.
Yeah, her rotational strength. She did a great job with Windsor, but like just even talking about like the fundamentals of her headlock, the strength of her headlock, just kind of makes you look at these wrestlers in a different way that you may not have paid attention to.
So there's a dragon screw onto Yuta, and then Shafir gets involved with Kevin Knight, and she's ejected. She goes up the stage, and an Osprey carries her to the back. Giant swing onto Bayley, and then Claudio's hitting uppercuts. Hot tag is made to Tanahashi, and Bayley hits the top rope Asai moonsault to Moxley. Sling blade is hit to Yuta, and then the babyfaces hit a triple twist and shout in unison. Jet speed then dive off the corners, and Tanahashi is left on top when the War Dogs appear. Gabe Kidd, Clark Connors, Robbie X, and Drilla Maloney. And this prevents Tanahashi from going for the high fly flow. But then Ospreay emerges from the back, and he's got a body bag. The announcers assume that he has put Marina Shafir into a body bag. And the ring is left with Tanahashi in the ring by himself with Yuta, and hits the high fly flow and gets the win in 11 minutes and 34 seconds. I really thought they were going to beat Tanahashi in this match going into the cage match. And I was pleasantly surprised that
when Wheeler Yuta was in there,
I still thought that they would go with like the heels getting the win going into the cage match. So I was pleasantly surprised that they gave Tanahashi the feel good moment, because I don't think he's going to be, I mean, he'll probably have several moments in the cage match, but I don't know if he's going to be the central focus.
I think he will have a lot of appeal, like just considering that it's the last match he'll have in the UK. I certainly don't think he'll be taking the pin or anything.
If this guy climbs to the top of the cage, I'm turning my stream off. I don't need that visual.
They might at least tease that. Like, it's the expectation is there for Tanahashi to do something.
Can he climb to the top of the cage?
He could jump off of shit pretty well, like we've seen, you know? Like,
it's not jumping off, it's climbing up, though. That's okay. Yeah. That's the question.
I don't know, man.
Could he scale a fence?
Maybe that's the high spot, just climbing, you know?
Like, and then he climbs right back down at the end.
Come back down. Yeah, just to show us that you can climb. Then we'll go, holy shit. I'm looking forward to it, man. It's such a weird like matchup, and it's such a weird matchup for Tanahashi to have that I'm expecting like it to turn out.
I've seen a lot of people like look at the fact, oh, it's 10 guys inside of this cage, but it's like, you got to remember, this is going to be the New Japan cage, like the way that they have set this up, where they've done like, I think they're going to have a ton of room for this. I know it's 10
like,
guys.
Are we talking like a Hell in a Cell type of like
arena? Yeah, where you still have the floor area. It's not like you're just confined to the one ring, because I would agree that would be very...
And how do you know that it'll be that cage?
I mean, the way that it was like set up by Ospreay, it was described like the same way as like the cage match in New Japan. I can't fathom them doing just a regular like... Where you have no floor room or anything like that. So
right. With 10 people in there. Yeah, I guess we'll see.
Really entertaining match, mainly for the crowd and for Tanahashi. And then afterward, we have a brawl with everyone. The ops join in. And then it's Darby with a coffin drop off of a balcony. Danielson says in the most serious way, "I am terrified about what will happen on Sunday." I don't think he was going out of his way to describe his legitimate feelings. And that was our big setup for the lights out cage match. And
it was not announced, but I'm assuming we're going to get the War Dogs minus Gabe Kidd against the Ops. That seems to be the pairing here.
I would think so, too. Yeah, we've yet to receive any sort of zero-hour announcements as yet, but that could make its way there. It could even... I feel like... we must have a card for Collision, right? Because
we do. I was going to go over it. Dude, it's a crazy card for Collision. We will go over that at the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Then Shivani brings out Adam Copeland, who gets an enormous reception. Crowd is singing a song, and then it's cut off when Christian's music plays. And he comes out, and he immediately goes to insulting the crowd. And Copeland stops and says, "Really? You're just going to be that guy?" And says, "Well, you know what? Christian, he is an asshole. But sometimes you need an asshole. And he's my scumbag. I mean, my asshole."
Yeah, kind of a bit of a stolen line. But, I mean, how many different ways can you say scumbag or asshole, I guess?
Cage explains that when you told me to go find myself, I did. And I discovered that I don't need to change a thing. I'm perfect just the way I am. And this got a babyface response from this crowd. And says, "Well, you and I, we are not on the same page. There's a lot of scar tissue there. But at least we are writing in the same book. And this is not a happy reunion, but one out of necessity. They are not friends.
They're allies of convenience."
That is true.
Yeah.
And he says that Copeland agreed to help me with my Nick and Kip problem, so I agreed to help him with FTR. And Cage looks him in the eye and says, "I give you my word that this version of me will be the best tag partner you've ever had." And they shake hands going into Forbidden Door. Overall, I thought this was a good segment with the Cage character not just eliminating everything so that it would be... I don't think anyone wanted that either, where it would just be just dropping everything that this character has built over these last 4 years.
The tension is, I think, what makes this current incarnation of Edge and Christian work. I mean, and I think you'd be erasing all of that great value Christian has built as part of this patriarchy character, right? A lot of criticism, I think I've also heard recently, of just maybe what felt like a rushed reunion, considering all the baggage between the two. And this kind of makes that transition a little bit more acceptable. They're, again, not necessarily friends. They are doing this, at least from Christian's perspective, because it will help him in his goals, which I think is a great way of playing it. I was very satisfied, I thought, with the explanation.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world, no minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Well, out comes Kip Sabian and Mother Wayne, and... "Who are you to boo a mother?" And Nick Wayne appears on the screen. So he is not there in Glasgow, and he has got crutches. And he talks about being attacked by Spike last week, and they broke his foot and have taken Forbidden Door away from him, and said, "I would have turned your reunion into a quick farewell tour. And Christian, I'm going to take your career away." He says he's always one step ahead, and we throw to a video as we are in a laboratory, and it is the resurrection of Killswitch into Luchasaurus, and the man has returned as he sits up in the stretcher and comes out, chokeslams Christian, and he is taking Nick Wayne's spot at Forbidden Door. We can talk about Luchasaurus.
Hold on. He's still billed as Killswitch on their promotional graphics.
Oh, was he? Because,
yeah.
I mean, they called him Luchasaurus on... When it came out, so okay. Well,
your name. Crowd called him Luchasaurus, but they still build him as Killswitch on the graphic.
Okay, well then he's Killswitch. What'd you think about the switch and Killswitch?
First of all, do you know where the injury actually took place?
I do not. No.
Yeah. So this was somewhat interesting, but I mean, I guess convenient that they have somebody who's a part of this matriarchy. That has yet to make a return and is healthy. I mean, throughout this entire run of Luchasaurus / Killswitch, they've really kind of essentially made him Kane. And tonight's return felt very Kane, like, you know, complete with just like, I don't know, I suppose video package resurrecting and everything. And I'm not that taken by it. Like it just kind of feels so, I guess done before. And I don't necessarily know if like they have the special effects that they can really kind of pull out that sort of mystery, but it's a perfectly fine sort of like replacement, you know, and it brings them back into the fold. So as an introductory match for a reunited Edge and Christian to have a win over, I think it's perfectly fine.
Mark Briscoe appeared backstage. He says he's coming for MJF. He's flown all the way to Scotland. This would not be a trip that was probably worth it for Mark Briscoe. Ricochet and the Gates meet with MJF. They agree to work together and to go after Mark Briscoe, so they shake on it. FTR against Brodito, with the winners going to face the Hurt Syndicate for the tag titles. They are watching in the back, and we have a Dax early on. He's tossing chairs into the ring. Paul Turner caught one of these chairs. Just tremendous hand-eye coordination that was displayed here. So the match is going along, and Brody goes for a tope suicida, and Stokely Hathaway gets in his way, and it looks like he just forearms him, and Brody sells this, and then they explain, well, there was a pipe in Stokely's sling. Mm. And Brody, this is like 6-7 minutes into this match, and this would be a lengthy match, and this dude bled a ton for the rest of this match. And Danielson, like every 5 minutes, would just give us an update. He's still bleeding. He's still bleeding. Like, yeah, this is how wounds work typically. He's not putting any pressure on it. He's going to bleed for that as long as he has blood to pump.
You would hope that like a cut like that would eventually like clot, right? That at least would be the expectation. But
this did not clot.
Not with him, no.
So Dax connects with a brainbuster, and Bandito gets in. Bandito hits a double Hurricanrana as he's then fighting out of the corner. King gets in. Cannonball is delivered. And then we have King stopping the Power and Glory spot by hanging Cash with the choke off the apron. And then it's Dax getting Brody and back suplexing him off of the top as Cash would hit the diving splash. That was just totally insane. A big reaction when he kicked out of that. And then we get the update that we are at the 25-minute mark. And they proceed to hit a shatter machine onto King. Bandito is the legal man, though, and gets a victory roll only for a two count. Danielson is putting out his ballot now that Bandito is his wrestler of the year already with months to go. King then saves Bandito from a shatter machine. He applies the choke onto Dax, and then they hit a spike pile driver to Brody onto the edge. Again, he's not the legal man. Bandito hits the Orihara moonsault. Danielson is losing his mind at this point. Dax saves Cash from a 21-plex. They hit the shatter machine, and then King returns from the dead after that spike pile driver and makes the save. The crowd goes insane with a minute left. FTR then go for a table with less than 60 seconds to go, and Danielson is aghast at this poor use of time management. And so a table is draped against the barricade, and in the closing seconds, Cash, realizing we're not going to win this match, goes for a tope suicida and crashes through this table, and they manage to avoid the time limit getting the usual booze that it always gets, because this table spot was just so spectacular that the crowd didn't even have a chance to boo the time limit hitting. They go the distance. Dax gets hit with a 21-plex, and Bandito he's like one of those MMA fighters that like thinks that the fight is still going and the referee has to inform them that it's over. And wouldn't you know it, they have announced a three-way match for Forbidden Door on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. We caught one.
I sent a title change, Way.
I wonder who's going to take the pin in this one.
I don't know. Huh. You have four candidates that have just gone 30 minutes here that are weakened by this as well. But I thought it was a hell of a match that they had. And yeah, it got you to your three-way.
Always incredibly impressive to see wrestlers like actually wrestle 30 minutes plus, you know. And for this one, I felt like it was, to me, a little bit telegraphed, considering like they're working at a bit more of a slower pace for like the first, you know, 10 minutes or so compared to their usual pace, which is like boom, 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 boom. But of course, they eventually got there towards the end with a great finish. And they fulfilled this explanation for why we now have three teams by giving us a really, really well done 30-minute match here.
There was a video for Okada and Swerve. And now it was Hangman's turn to come out. He calls MJF a gutless coward, and this is your only shot at my title, and he's going to take his ostrich leather boots and place them up MJF's ass. So MJF's music plays, but he does not come out. And Tony Schiavone gets on the mic, explaining that MJF has a camera in the back, and that if Hangman leaves the ring before Max is done speaking, something bad will happen. I know what everyone's thinking. Well, what's so bad that could happen that would force this man to be stuck in this ring? Well, MJF, with the help of Ricochet and the Gates of Agony, have bound and gagged Mark Briscoe, who is seated on a chair, all tied up. And MJF has several requests for their Forbidden Door match. And if they are accepted, Mark will be safe. If not, he's going to murder Mark Briscoe on a taped program, which these masochists at Warner Brothers Discovery were willing to run. And they pour gasoline.
Maybe this is why Triller had to delay this
broadcast. Perhaps they needed to scan this first to make sure they don't have a man being burnt to death.
Cremated.
So they pour gasoline over Mark, and then MJF pulls out a Zippo lighter. And he explains what his demands are. The title can change hands by DQ or countout, and I don't have to use my contract to get this match. And you have until the count of five. And as he is counting, Hangman did weigh this until the count of four before finally deciding, okay, fine, I will give in to this. And unlike most of the heels, they did not still go ahead with their deed, and Mark Briscoe was not murdered here. I thought this was completely ridiculous to how far we have to push things for a babyface to have to relent to be in a handicap situation or to reverse these stipulations. And I couldn't take any of this seriously.
So was it the type of ridiculous that took you out from the immersion, or was it the type of ridiculous that made you more interested, a la Swerve's house being set on fire or Swerve going to the baby crib?
I'm not, my interest in the match is not harmed by this, but I just felt like this was like, literally this was, our next step is like holding a loaded gun to a babyface's best friend to get out of a stipulation.
Well, I guess what's stopping Hangman from re-threatening MJF somehow? But I guess how could you threaten MJF, you know, like what would get MJF to say,
okay, Tony Khan be just, he's cool with this, right? Like this kind of duress is fair game to set up title matches.
I mean, as we've stated, you know, like burning somebody's house down, threatening their baby, stabbing them with needles, like this is all fair game. You know, this is all sportsmanship in AEW. So I mean, that would be an explanation.
Does someone have to get lit on fire by the end of this feud with Mark Briscoe?
You might be waiting for the death match for that one. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe Jack Perry will come back. He'll teach them how to light yourself on fire.
Okay. So, for me, I maybe came out of this segment feeling like maybe completely not very satisfied with the way things turned out here, because how did we get here? You know, we had, first of all, like MJF win this contract. He then challenged Paige for it. Paige said, no, you're going to have to cash in order to use it. So he goes, well, first of all, Paige said, you have to beat Mark Briscoe. You have to face Mark Briscoe in order to do it. He beat Mark Briscoe. Yes, it was through shenanigans, but he did beat him. But even to that, Paige said, you got to cash in. So MJF verbally cashes in, and so we have our match set up. Now, the next week, we're basically just kind of forgetting about all that. And just and instead now MJF has essentially received his match without. Well,
why didn't MJF
in.
Do this before the Mark Briscoe match? I mean, why exert yourself with a match when you could have literally lit a match and solved your problem?
I think that's a valid question. The answer
shouldn't he do this for all future wants in this company? just have gasoline on the ready.
Well, the answer is sure, but the real answer is. Well, they needed to fill TV time, and so we needed to go through all of those steps. But I do feel like it's not such great writing because it just kind of made all of those steps moot to me. And I don't know.
Let's just look at the actual structure of this match. And does, like, I hate the stupid, the title can change hands on a count out or DQ deal. And does that, at, like, for this match, like, you, it kind of limits, like, what you can do in this match, does it not?
What do you mean? I don't think like, so. What do you mean?
Because...
So because you can't do DQs, you can't do that. Well, you're going to get the heel thing of, like, you know, MJF goading Paige into hitting him with a weapon or something like that, right?
Yeah, that part does not sound appealing. I have confidence this is still going to be an excellent match between these two, but I wouldn't say that these stipulations have... maybe it's just my post House of Torture G1... PTSD that is still very much a part of my psyche.
I'm very curious to see if, because we know this isn't going to be the main event, at least not the real main event. So will they feel an urge to drag this out to another PLE? Maybe All Out, you know, is at this point a more likely place for them to end this and to actually, you know, have a title change. But of course, we also, of course, have the Hurt Syndicate that might still be in play with all of this. If they wanted to, what essentially are the odds stacked up against Paige is that Paige will not have to beat MJF two times, right? First in this match, second time when he cashes in, presumably at the end of losing this first match. So that's a very much a possibility. But the fact that it's not the main event maybe suggests to me that they might hold off on it. There's still a lot of different ways this can play out. I guess by the way they got here, I'm not completely satisfied with the way that the story was told to get to this point.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Way answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Backstage, Hangman would make his way back there. He took out Ricochet with a chair shot and then stormed out of the arena. Main event, Mercedes Moné and Athena against Timeless Toni Storm and Alex Windsor with Mina Shirakawa coming out with them. And Persephone was shown in the front row taking in this match. And they officially announced Bozilla will be added to the four-way as the Stardom representative. So,
yeah. No, I've not seen any of Bozilla, so I'm looking forward to maybe getting a glimpse of.
You didn't see the obstacle she had to go through to earn the spot, the big 32 woman tournament.
You're joking.
Yes, I am.
Well, Athena, what did Persephone have to do?
Be announced last Wednesday after Dynamite.
That's it.
Athena warned Moné not to screw this up tonight. So Athena was just like yelling at Mercedes throughout this match and like bossing her around. Toni Storm got in and did like a fat bastard impression, yelling, "Get in my belly."
Here in Scotland.
Yeah, that reference is older than the King of the Ring 2001.
Well, for her, it'd be in the future, wouldn't it? That movie.
I guess so. Yeah. She was, what, 60 when that movie came out in 99? Storm and Windsor knocked them down with headbutts. And then Athena would yell at Moné to spread her legs, not in that kind of way, and delivered a Lope through them to the floor, and then a hip attack sends Mercedes off the apron.
That Tope Suicida from Athena to the announce desk was crazy. It was like cash.
Yeah. Nuts. I mean, she had a ton of speed and, yeah, very low height to get off the mat to hit. They have the heat on Alex Windsor for a long time, and Moné misses the running knees in the corner, and Windsor manages a tornado DDT Sorry, it's Storm who gets in and hits the tornado DDT. Danielson is very concerned about Storm, who is laying on her back for 20 seconds. And then it's Danielson highlighting the rotational power of Alex Windsor, that many top athletes have great rotational power. He was excellent in this match, particularly, as Wei mentioned, with Alex Windsor. Athena then hits a Storm Zero to Tony on the steps, and that takes Tony out of the match. The statement maker on Windsor is turned into a Samoan drop, and then as Windsor goes for the Scorpion Deathlock, Mercedes starts to tap, but she's not the legal woman, and so Windsor is all confused as she releases the hold and gets hit with an O-face out of nowhere, and it is Athena pinning Windsor in 16 minutes and 2 seconds, and the story is that Tony is battling this neck injury and is weakened going into the match with Athena.
Bit of a tough match to book an out of, because everybody, you know, has arguably reason to not lose this one. I mean, obviously your title challenger, obviously both of your champions in Monet and Storm. So unfortunately, Windsor kind of pulls the short straw here. But I don't think it necessarily hurts her, especially in front of this crowd. This is our first chance to see what I would say UK crowd, how they react to an AEW Alex Windsor, and they understandably treated her like a big star, making a bit of a homecoming here. She looked great. I thought all four of them looked great in terms of star power. I mean, this was a very worthwhile main event that did a great job of promoting both of these matches at Forbidden Door, I thought.
Yeah, I thought this was, like, especially on Alex Windsor, who, I mean, taking the fall or not, I thought she came off great in this match. I thought it was one of her stronger showcases so far into Sunday.
And a big tease of a Tony Storm neck injury heading into the match at Forbidden Door.
That is it. So you had what was a pretty heated crowd in Glasgow for the setup. And we'll quickly go through the lineup for Collision. So they taped this on Wednesday. It will air Saturday night. And this is our card. The Young Bucks taking on Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong.
Which was set up in that initial attack earlier.
Yes. The Grizzled Young Vets taking on the Gates of Agony. Big Bill against Mark Andrews. I'm going to reveal who answers the Max Caster Open Challenge. It will be Max Caster against Zack Sabre Jr. Queen Aminata.
Holy shit. Wow. That's
yes.
Awesome. Spoiled. You spoiled it for me. How dare you? I can't watch it now.
Maybe he'll do a rap.
Zach?
The Zach rap.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Queen Aminata and Willow Nightingale against Julia Hart and Sky Blue. Megan Bain against Isla Dawn in her second post-WWE match. An 8-man tag with Hiromu Takahashi and the Sky Flight team of Scorpio Sky and Top Flight against Hechicero, Josh Alexander, Lance Archer, and Rocky Romero. And just because, Konosuke Takeshita against Tomohiro Ishii.
What the fuck? Are you serious? What?
This is a wild. This like, is a that would have been one of the eight matches for that been, Collision.
That would have been one of the most anticipated matches of the G1. Okay, wow, that's crazy. What roster he that's backstage there right now.
This looks like an incredible Collision on paper.
Yeah, you would hope that some of these matches might have been announced on the broadcast.
Well, they went through a couple of them right at the end, including Takeshita and Ishii. But, man, they were going real quick if you didn't see the graphics. You go.
It's still one, though. I wonder if it'll, like, make much of a dent in terms of ratings, just because it's such a packed weekend for people. Like, will people have so much interest in 2 hours of, like, yes, really solid wrestling, but, like, 2 hours of wrestling nonetheless when they're just coming back the next day in the afternoon for more?
I don't know if, like... I think Collision, it is what it's going to be. I mean, you're probably going to get a great wrestling show, but yeah, I don't see this one being like something that is going to, they're not going up against a WWE show. So, I mean, that's one thing.
Man, Takeshita just coming off of like the most grueling G1 of anybody's, like the most ring time anybody's ever had.
There's no way
had.
That guy is anywhere near 100% after that G1.
And you're getting a match against Tomohiro Ishii. Interesting. Okay.
All right. We're going to head on over for the Post Wrestling Cafe members, and we're going to go through your feedback and questions, and we're also going to scan through the Forbidden Door card. So we are going to say goodbye on YouTube, but we are back on Thursday with Rewind Away, and Friday, we will be live at 10 Eastern. SmackDown is on in the afternoon, but we're going to have our usual start time of 10 Eastern on Friday evening. So you can join us for that, and a big weekend of shows coming out as well. So postwrestling.com is where you can go. Hit subscribe on the channel, and now we are heading over to forum.postwrestling.com. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.